and survive outside this laboratory environment. The passageway outside is drenched in high-intensity ultraviolet light that will deactivate the nanos on contact.
Ultraviolet light,
Westfall murmured. We designed the nanos to be deactivated by UV, Torrey said. It's a standard safety precaution. Westfall nodded, apparently satisfied.
Thank you for a very enlightening tour, Mr. Torrey, she said.
His composure recovered. Torrey extended his hand as he said, If there's anything else you want to know, just give me a holler.
Yes, I'll do that.
As she approached the door, one of her guards opened it for her, and she swept regally out of the lab. Archer puffed out a breath of air.
I wonder how she found out that you were here,
he muttered. Torrey waggled a hand in the air.
Well, she seems satisfied that we're not going to destroy everything in sight.
Archer looked at the still open door.
I hope so.
But as she stepped into the elevator with her two assistants, Catherine Westfall was thinking,
There's no security at that lab at all. Anyone could walk right in and take a sample of their nanomachines. They must lock the door at night, but we could get through without any real trouble.
Then she asked herself,
How can I get a sample of the goblets that haven't been specifically programmed yet? I'll need some nanos that can attack a wide variety of things.
Mission Control Center. Max Yeager was surprised to see Linda Vishnevskaya sitting at the central console in the otherwise empty control center. All the other consoles were dead and quiet. The big wall screens also blank, except for the one at the front of the chamber that showed Faraday hanging in orbit outside the station. What are you doing here? He asked, almost in a growl. She turned, her violet eyes wide with surprise. What are you doing here, Max? She countered. He sagged into the chair of the console closest to her. Jabbing a thumb toward the image on the wall screen, he explained, Big meeting tomorrow morning to decide the date for launching her back into the ocean. Vishnevskaya's face relaxed into a warm smile.
So the little father has come to check out his baby one more time.
Yeager made a sour face. I'm an engineer, not a sentimental old fart.
No, not sentimental, she said, straining to keep her face serious. Not at all.
I'm trying to work out a defense system for her, something that'll keep those damn sharks off her.
You want to protect your baby, said Vishnevskaya
with an impish gleam in her eye. She's a machine, a ship, Yeager protested. I've got a couple of daughters, you know. I can tell the difference between a machine and a human being.
You are married, Vishnevskaya said.
Divorced, almost 20 years ago. Yeager looked uncomfortable, but he added in a near whisper, Who could put up with an engineer for a husband? Vishnevskaya lapsed into silence. I was figuring, Yeager said, getting back to business, that we could rig the outer shell with a high-potential electric field, shock anything that comes within 12 meters of her skin.
12 meters?
Vishnevskaya shook her head slightly.
Electric fields dissipate rapidly in water, don't they?
The water is slightly conducting. It's laced with ammonia and other ions. Acidic. Arching her brows, Vishnevskaya admitted.
It might work, then.
I think I can make it work. Just enough to keep those damn sharks off her.
Could you use the light panels on the outer hull? She suggested.
The light panels? Yeager thought about it for all of a second. Nah. Archer and the science guys wanted them so they could flash pictures of the Leviathans, try to communicate with them visually.
Yes, but...
No, I need something more than a bunch of blinking lights to defend her, Yeager said.
You're going with her, aren't you?
Yeager flinched with surprise. Going with her? What do you mean? Smiling almost sadly, Vishnevskaya said,
You're going to insist that you be one of the crew. You can't let her go down there without you.
He tried to frown, but instead his expression melted into an admission of defeat. Yeah, I want to go with her. I don't know if Archer and the other paper pushers will let me, though. Vishnevskaya gave a little sigh, then said,
It would help if you volunteered to be immersed in the perfluorocarbon. You could show Archer and the others that you can stand the physical pressure.
Yeager brightened slightly.
You're right. I ought to get some time in at the immersion center. He got to his feet and headed for the door, leaving Vishnevskaya sitting in the emptied control center, wishing she had kept her mouth shut. Red Devlin was startled when Catherine Westfall suddenly showed up in his kitchen. It was well after midnight. The rest of the kitchen crew had gone to their beds, but not Devlin. This was his domain, and he worked his own hours. He had been tinkering with one of the serving robots, replacing the LED display screen that covered its flat top. "Mr. Devlin," he jerked erect, dropping the pliers he'd been holding. They clattered onto the tiled floor. The kitchen was in its off-hours lighting, pools of brightness separated by swaths of dark shadow. The woman stood in shadow, silhouetted against a cone of light. "What are you doing here?" he snapped, annoyed at this intrusion into his domain. "I'm Catherine Westfall," she said, stepping closer to him. "I need to talk with you." Devlin wiped his hands on his grimy apron. "Mrs. Westfall?" It was her, all right. He recognized her from the images he'd seen on the nets. Small, slightly built, her face sculpted in planes and hollows like a statue out of ancient Egypt. She wore a one-piece coverall of coral pink that fitted her like a second skin. Jewelry glittered at her wrists, her throat, her earlobes. "You are Rodney Devlin, aren't you?" she asked in a voice that was almost a whisper. "Yes'm," he replied, wiping his hands again before extending his right toward her. Westfall barely touched his hand. "I understand that you are quite good at getting things done." For one of the few times in his long life, Devlin felt embarrassed. Here was this elegant lady, and he was in his grease monkey's apron, his wiry red hair uncombed, his bushy mustache straggling. She was inspecting him, eyeing him up and down as if he were a horse or a pet that she was considering buying. "I do my best, Mrs. Westfall," he said. "How long have you been here at Station Gold?" she asked. "Long as the station's been open, ma'am. More'n 20 years. Westfall nodded. "You're older than you look," she said absently. "You ought to get the gray streaks out of your hair, though." He didn't know what to say. "You've been getting away with a lot of illegal activities over all those years, haven't you?" Devlin's mouth dropped open. "Drug manufacturing, smuggling equipment, brewing liquor, VR sex simulations. It's quite a list."
Ma'am, I may have done a few things in my time that are outside the rules, but nothing that was illegal."
"Extra legal," Westfall said, the hint of a smile at the corners of her lips.
Devlin shrugged. "Can't run an operation like this station by staying inside the rule book every step of the way. People need things that the rules don't cover, you know."
"Perhaps," Westfall conceded.
Sensing that she was after something, Devlin asked, "So what is it I can do for you, ma'am?" She hesitated. After a couple of heartbeats, she said,
"You understand that my people have uncovered enough evidence against you to put you away for the rest of your natural life."
"Now, wait.
Don't bother to deny it. I can produce witnesses that will swear to your illegal activities."
"Extra-legal," Devlin amended, but his palms were starting to sweat.
"Whatever," said Westfall. "As a member of the IAA's governing council, it's my duty to see that the laws are obeyed and the regulations enforced."
Devlin's tension eased. She's after something, he realized. "Mrs. Westfall," he said, lowering his head slightly to indicate some contrition, "whatever I've done, I've never harmed anybody. I've helped this place to function better, more smoothly."
"Have you?"
"I have, ma'am. And I'm ready to help you if you need something that's, stretching the rules."
"Do you know those two nanotech people who came here from Cellini?" she asked, her tone suddenly sharp, brittle.
Devlin nodded. "I run meals down to them every day."
"Then you know their nanotechnology laboratory?"
"I know where it is."
"Good," Westfall said. "I need a sample of nanomachines, and I need it without anyone knowing about it, except the two of us."
Devlin ran a hand over his close-cropped brush of red hair.
"Can you do it?" she demanded.
He tugged at his mustache momentarily, then replied, "Sure.
To himself, he added silently,